The Bible study on KFUO Radio is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, centered in the gospel of Jesus Christ in faithfulness, servanthood, responsiveness, and excellence, Concordia Seminary. And the phones are open at 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Ask the pastor whatever's on your mind this day. Our guest, Pastor Mark Femmel from Zion Lutheran Church in Maryland Heights. Good morning, Pastor.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us today.
Great to be here.
I'm not familiar with your background or your family situation, so if you could remind me, perhaps there's some listeners in the audience that haven't heard from you before.
My wife and I are both from San Antonio, Texas, which is like 900 miles away, which is a wonderfully fun drive.
Yeah.
But our whole family is there, so we get to have an opportunity to see everybody at the same time. And we came to St. Louis about 8 years ago for the seminary, and then the Lord wanted to keep us here, so he got us some calls.
Uh-huh. And what did you do before seminary?
I was going to be a teacher. I was going to be a math teacher for middle school. But halfway through college, God said, no, I'm going to make you teach something else.
And it's been good, huh?
Yeah. Greater than the sum of its parts.
It's summertime, and I guess the living's easy as a pastor in a church. Things slow down a little bit, get a little sleepy in the summertime.
It can. It depends on how you do your summer.
Yeah.
Sometimes it can be really easy. Sometimes it just means you're burning the candle at all the ends trying to get something for everybody.
Some churches have more active Sunday schools for kids than others. Do you have a vacation Bible school at your church?
We do. Thank you. The end of July, July 26th to July 30th, right before, you know, the hellish month of August in St. Louis, we're going to have some awesome gospel. That's going to be the end of July, right there in the morning, 9 to 12. So you still have time for the pool and time for everything else and time for Jesus. So
is that fun for you?
It's a lot of work, but it's really fun because people entrust you with their kiddos to do some awesome things, and it's amazing. It's amazing how much kids pick up. It's amazing how much they can learn.
Was Vacation Bible School a part of your tradition growing up?
When I grew up a year or two, my mom and I were both Vacation Bible School teachers. She was a teacher and I was the assistant.
So oh, my.
I got to do all sorts of fun, gooey, sticky crafts.
So you've got a background of working within the church, huh?
I do, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, does your wife get involved in the ministry there at Zion?
She's a stay-at-home mom, and recently she's been helping us out with our youth group and some other things. It's really cool. We're having a youth group. We're trying to kind of reinvent something, or I guess invent something. We're doing the Jesus Freaks. I don't want our youth to settle for people who just kind of swear off the faith. I mean, you're robbing yourself. You're not just in internal things, but in the world to come, in this world right now. But also, it's kind of teaching them to rebel against just the casual Christianity, you know, that people just kind of check in on Sunday and that's then they put it on the shelf.
And what age group is this youth group?
That's high school and all the way up to like college age.
And that's a tricky time, isn't it? We lose some of those kids.
It is. And honestly, every time it's tricky time. It's just that's the easiest time to fall away because it's now becoming not your parents' faith who are dragging you to church on Sunday, but it's becoming, where are you going to cast your lot?
This week's General Assembly of the Presbyterian Church USA will consider redefining marriage to include same-sex couples and allowing ministers to perform same-sex weddings. The Reverend Carmen Fowler, president of the Presbyterian Lay Committee, believes those sorts of initiatives are to blame for the denomination's declining membership. Her group supports upholding the church's traditional definition of marriage. The PCUSA's newly elected moderator, Cynthia Bulbach, supports gay marriage, but told the assembly on Saturday that the denomination has become paralyzed. The Reverend Carmen Fowler says the PCUSA is paralyzed because it has become disconnected from Jesus Christ.
We do need our denomination to return to Christ, her first love, that we might be presenting him in a winsome way to a world that's dying to know him.
Is that what happens when a church becomes disconnected from its head, Jesus Christ, Pastor?
Well, I'd say once you separate yourself from Jesus and the way he wants your church to actually be run, you know, stepping away from his commandments and away from his will, you're kind of on your own. And have fun fighting Satan. He always wins when you're on your own.
There's a lot of this going around these days, this kind of debate.
You know there is, and you know it's fine to look at a tree and say that's a good tree and or that's a bad tree, but until you see the fruit, you're never quite sure. Mm-hmm. Every time a denomination goes in this direction, they always fracture, they always fall apart, and they always shrink. And you know, we saw it with the Episcopal Church, and right now the ELCA is kind of going in this direction, and that's closer to home as Lutheran Church, but. Even with that, you have a number of pastors and congregations who are begging their pastors, let's just leave. Let's create our own church body. Let's just leave. And it's an ugly thing.
But yet, can it be a healthy thing from time to time? It's kind of reminds me of weeding out your garden.
It is, but the problem is a lot of people in the churches don't have the solid foundation. And they're going to be led astray. And Jesus, he rails against the Sadducees and the Pharisees, the church leaders of his day, who were taking the religion in a different direction than Jesus. And that's the one time where you see him really railing against people. And he's pronouncing woes, and he's calling them whitewashed tombs. They're filled with death on the inside. And the Bible's clear. The shepherds are going to be judged to a higher standard. And if the shepherds are leading the sheep astray, Ezekiel says God will destroy them. Now, that's the law side. The gospel side is God can change any heart. God does change hearts. But sometimes he lets people have their way so that everybody else will see that's not a path we want to follow.
No, it turns into a slippery slope, as some of our guests would say.
Well, yeah, no kidding. Mm-hmm. And slime runs downhill. So the farther down that slope you go, the faster you're going to slip.
Now, the kids in your youth group, they might not hold the same beliefs, think the same way. They may consider themselves to be more tolerant to other people's alternative lifestyles and such. At least that's what the pollsters are telling us. Does that trouble you, and do you detect that?
Yeah, well, we talked about this when we launched our Jesus Freaks youth group. We talked about, you know, how do people see Christians, you know, and we talked about different ways that they see Christians. We're judgmental, we're hypocritical, we're anti, you know, we're homophobic, we're anti-homosexual, we're old-fashioned, we're, you know, stuck up, we're intolerant. And I said, you know, a lot of times we've earned these things. Most of these labels we've earned because, you know, we're always chasing these things, you know. And one of the ones, one of our youth group members, Eric, said, we're always after money. And it's funny because, you know, there won't be a charge for meal, but there will be a free will offering. You know? And but, I mean, we earn these labels. The problem is we just say... We just say homosexuality is bad, so stop being bad. Instead, we should do what Jesus says. He says, I want to take care of you, and I don't want you to have messes in your lives. There are certain things that will create messes in your lives. There are certain things that will create problems in your lives. Out of love, I'm going to call you out of these things to say, don't blow up your life. Don't make messes in your lives. And sometimes we can see it immediately, you know, like stealing a car. You know, by the time you get a mile, the police are already after you. That's immediate. That makes sense. But some of the other things, they don't seem as immediate, or they don't seem as clear what the bad consequences are. But you can trace any sin all the way to its logical conclusion, and it's a place you don't want to be.
And what formed this thinking in these kids? Was it the culture, each other? They rely on each other more? Or is it that the parents just aren't educating kids enough at home?
You're saying that Christians can be hypocritical and judgmental and all that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the culture, and that's how we're constantly viewed. You know, if you, you know, you look at the way that the really active evangelical Christians are on the front lines, and they're spouting all this stuff, you know, they're spouting all this stuff. I was writing an article about Christians in politics, and it was very difficult for me to come up with a number of outstanding Christians on certain issues, because they're all on the same side. And so people assume that every Christian is just as single-focused, single-minded, intolerant as all these people on the front pages, as all these people on the front pages. So when people see the Westboro Baptist Church holding up the God hates fags signs and, you know, Jesus is murdering your soldiers and thank God for IEDs, I mean, these signs, people just broad stroke it all over all Christians, that we're all this way.
In your face. Obnoxious, proselytizing.
Yeah, we always want to save people to make them just as obnoxiously closed-minded and old-fashioned and judgmental and homophobic as we are.
Yeah. So the kids in your youth group, do they go to parochial school or they go to public school?
Some of them have gone to public school and some of them have gone to Lutheran school.
Mm-hmm. Is it more of a challenge for the Christian kids in the public school setting?
Well, there's different challenges in every setting. I'll say kids who grow up in the public school setting have a lot higher likelihood of running into some of the uglier issues. That doesn't mean Lutheran schools are above problems. You know, there's gossip and infighting and bullying still happens.
We're hearing that the youth of today are into volunteerism and helping others. And does that help you engage them more when you've got projects for them to do?
This is one of the things I just started at the congregation I'm at, and this is one of the things I'm really trying to make central. At least once a month or once every 2 months, I want to do some big thing that will help them. So get involved in their community and make real differences, because talk is cheap, and if all we're going to do is get together on Saturdays when we have a youth group and talk, and that's cheap, what are we doing for the world? You know, so we're coming up with a bunch of different ways that we can actually interact with our community and do good stuff. So, you know, it would be something like if we go to an abortion clinic, is my classic example when we were talking and kind of shooting the stuff around. We won't hold up signs, Dr. So-and-so is a baby killer, don't come here, or God won't forgive you kind of signs. Instead, we'll do something like hold up signs saying, you know, consider the option of adoption. Because if you carry the child, it's not like it's going to be with you the rest of your life if you really can't take care of that child. There are people who will love that child probably better than you could because they've been waiting 10 years for the child. So if you consider the option of adoption, you won't have that child the rest of your life. But if you just kill your baby, you will have that guilt for the rest of your life. Mm. And it's some astronomical, up in the 90% numbers, I think, of people who struggle with post-abortion syndrome. And if people were to talk to us, if we do this demonstration, we would say, you know, we're not going to tell you it's right, we're not going to tell you it's wrong, we're not going to tell you what we believe, because that might be different from what you believe, but we do want you to do this. Go home and look up post-abortion syndrome on Wikipedia and know what you're asking for. And if they go home and look it up, they're not going to be back for that. So that's totally different. That's a totally different demonstration than calling doctors baby killers and throwing bricks through windows. Or, you know, another thing that we can do is come up with, like, YouTube kind of videos that we can put on our website that, you know, kind of wrestle with the Bible verse people misunderstand, kind of wrestle with, you know, Christians kind of taking it on from a different perspective. You know, it's not that we're homophobic or that we hate people who are homosexual. We actually love them more than people who are saying, yeah, yeah, do whatever you want, do whatever you want, do whatever you want. It's great.
You're perhaps conscious of the fact that we're in this postmodern time when people pick and choose their belief system or make up what becomes their belief system based on their preferences, what they want their belief system to be. Are you aware of that? And is there any way to get kids started in the right direction so that they don't do that? Can we break that chain?
Good luck taking on the world. Good luck taking on the culture. Good luck taking on what 7 billion people are putting onto your kids and putting onto us. I would in turn say, I want to exploit it. If everybody were postmodern, then we could fine-tune all of our skills to reach out to people who are postmodern. I think the a lot of people are saying postmodern is the worst thing, it's horrible, it's bad, but it is what it is. I just want to exploit it.
Is one of your greatest resources that little blue catechism?
My greatest resource is the Bible itself, actually. I love just reading it and working our way through it. Now, when we're in confirmation, I'll definitely teach the catechism. It's a wonderful book, but I really like kind of working through, especially with the younger people, the stories of the Bible. So if I'm teaching baptism, you know, I'll talk about how God parted the Red Sea, you know, and the people of God walked through there, and by that, the Egyptians go through, and they don't make it. Sin doesn't make it through baptismal waters. God destroys everything that should kill you. God destroys everything that's bigger than you. God destroys every claim that your old life has on you. And so that's how I approach baptism, things like that.
Hmm. the youth in the age group you're talking about begin to question everything they were taught in Sunday school when they were kids.
Right.
Some of those Bible stories. Do the kids in high school and approaching college believe in creationism?
You know, it's really interesting because I came from the public school system, and I didn't go to a religious school until seminary.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always thought that there was this huge, big fight over creation evolution, and that almost everybody believes in evolution, and then it's going to be this uphill battle with creation. It is amazing. I'll talk to our high school kids and even our college kids, and I'll reference evolution, creation. They'll just chuckle because they know. You just don't get life from nothing. You don't just get a bunch of space particles floating around for a while and, oh, hey, look, it's a thing, and it grew, and here we go. And they even had this Cynthia deal where they have created life in a lab. And so the whole world was all excited. Not the whole world, but a lot of people were all excited in the scientific community. We've created life. We've created life. We've proven that you don't need God to do it. Well, it was the fruit of a 20-year full-time multi-staffed scientific pursuit. I mean, it proves that you can't have that apart from somebody outside the system making it happen. But here's the craziest thing. They're acting like they created life. What they did is they took the DNA out of one cell and put it in another cell.
So they took existing spare parts and reconformed it.
They essentially Xeroxed it, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they copied something out of a book, they cut the words out that they wanted, and they
cut
put it on another page.
Yes.
My computer does that every day. Cut and paste.
What issues are they concerned about? Do they talk to you freely? Will the kids approach pastor these days and say, I got a problem with this, can you help me?
At the church I was at before, there was a youth pastor, and so he took most of the opportunities to hang out with the youth, and so they did approach him. The congregation I'm at right now, I'm fairly new, so I'm still building these relationships and whatnot, but I'm trying to build the friendship, trying to build the relationship, and so hopefully at some point down the line when they find themselves in a difficult situation, they'll know that when they run into me, they'll run into Jesus. Yeah. And everybody likes Jesus.
And what's that?
And everybody likes Jesus.
Is this something you have to do with the adults as well, being a new pastor, develop these relationships?
Yeah, you do, and it's such a privilege for the... For the first several months, I wanted to do a whole bunch of visits to hang out with the people of the congregation, get to know them, get to know their stories, let them get to know me, because I can't stand up there and preach the Word of God to people I don't know. It just doesn't work.
You have to have that one-on-one connection.
You do. A shepherd knows his sheep.
Uh-huh. And then how important are your peers, your colleagues, in supporting your transition to a new place?
You're saying like fellow pastors and whatnot?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the circuit is phenomenal. We're in a really good circuit, and so we kind of talk about a whole bunch of different things. They're kind of showing me the ropes of doing ministry in that area. And I'll say more than that. I have a very good friend who's a pastor in St. Louis also, and he and I meet about once a week, and we just kind of chit-chat. We kind of come up with ideas, or we test ideas on each other. And having a pastor as a friend is a tremendous blessing.
But is that the expense of having a friend who's not a pastor? Can pastors have acquaintances, and can you do that? It's almost like you're different.
Yeah, you know, they say that you're supposed to have friends outside your congregation.
Yeah.
So that way you can just kind of hang out and, you know, put the alb in the closet. But I got a couple of friends that I hang out with pretty regularly. But I don't know. I just want to hang out with my people.
Sometimes, I guess from time to time, it can get a little lonely, too, being a pastor.
It can. I haven't found that yet.
Good for you.
I've always got something to
do. You got a million-dollar smile, no wonder. Our phones are open at 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, be it something in Scripture, something that's going on in the culture, something to do with religion. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. So what are they asking you at the church level these days?
Well, I guess the biggest question recently came up in a Bible study. We were just doing Revelation like normal, and then I said, now you know when you die, the end of the story isn't just having a, you know, being in the Spirit and in the presence of God. I said, you actually get to have a body. And they said, now hold on a second. You actually have a body? And I said, yeah. And they said, isn't heaven enough? And I said, well, apparently God doesn't think so. He actually wants you to have a body. It's not like, you know, so when you die, you're with Jesus in spirit. And then And then at some point he's going to bring you back to a body. And they said, aren't bodies weak? And I said, well, they are now. But when we come back, we'll look like Jesus. And I said, this is cool because that means you get to not only just be in the presence of God, you get to have, you get to eat the food there, you get to smell the smells, you actually get to touch the gold. It's a really cool thing. And it was interesting because, you know, as pastors, you get distracted with these really deep theological things and these, you know, inner mysteries and these complicated deals, but most people don't care.
Do you think that some people just want you to help them get through the week to the next Sunday? Give me something. Give me a takeaway that's going to help get me through this week.
Yeah, that's the most important thing.
People maintain a little sanity. Do something worthwhile.
Yeah, people want to see how Jesus interacts with regular life on a daily level. So when they're going to the grocery store, when they're working in their garden, when they're hanging out with their grandkids, when they're talking to their kids who don't want to go to church, whether they're, you know, when they're aunt or their husband is in the hospital, you know, how in the world can we get them out, that kind of stuff. It's really cool. It really brings you back to center, saying, you know, this other stuff, it's neat, it's fun, but what's most important is getting your people through the week.
You said something key there, helping your kids who don't want to go to church. Do most kids want to go to church?
Well, it depends on the kids. You get both. But the hardest thing, and I see this as a pastor in both congregations I've been at, adult kids, they who don't want to go to church, they break their parents' hearts every week.
Yeah, I've heard before a mother say, for Mother's Day, the nicest thing you could do is just come to church with me.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. There's some kids who, because of whatever baggage they dragged into the life, they can't even do that. Yeah. And that's sad.
So should parents make their kids go to church?
Well, I talked to our parents about this, and I said, especially if you have adult kids, you know, it's even more tough. But I said, do your best to show them that it's not go to church because I said so, or go to church because you better. But I said, think about why you go to church. And we were talking about it, and you know, we go to church because we want to have the Lord's Supper. We go to church because we want to hear the Bible. We go to church because we want to hear some of God's words. We go to church because when you go there, you leave feeling clean, you know, as opposed to all the junk you pulled into your life. When you go there, you leave feeling everything's going to be okay. When you go there, you get to hear about Jesus in a way you hadn't heard before. And you get to thank him for everything you've done. And I said, think of it that way. People aren't going to go to church, especially in the long term, if you say, go to church because I said so, or I'm going to guilt you into it, or I'm going to keep asking you until you say yeah. Instead, people are going to start going to church if they realize they don't want to miss out on what's being handed out. You know, that's the same reason why I go to a McDonald's. I don't go to McDonald's because I think I need to support my local economy. I go to McDonald's because they enable me to buy ice cream for my kids, and that makes me a superstar.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. There are adult children of Christian parents who went through catechism class, did all the things they were supposed to do, and then for one reason or another, here they are, married adults with a kid, and they don't even bother to get the baby baptized. That's going on out there in the culture, and that breaks hearts. How do you deal with a situation like that?
Or when...
I'll tell you what, we'll tackle that when we come back, okay?
All right.
All right. Our guest, Pastor Mark Femmel from Zion Lutheran Church in Maryland Heights. Our phone's open at 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Straight to the phones when we get back here on Ask the Pastor.
August 7, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., a great opportunity for you. The Lay Bible Institute of Concordia Seminary presents Reverend John Loom speaking on the topic of Muslim outreach. Sessions include various topics on Islam, what you need to know about your Muslim neighbors, co-workers, or even the Muslim your child may date in the future. For information, call 314-505-7486 or visit csl.edu.
Visit our website at kfuo.org and spend some time in the Worship Archive section. You'll not only discover the audio from our Saturday evening and Sunday morning worship broadcasts and sermons, we have links to other sermons as well. You can listen to a sermon from some of the pastors you hear regularly on our other programs, Pastor Nathan Metter, for example, in Plymouth, Wisconsin. This resource could be really handy if you're vacationing this summer and feel out of touch with your own congregation. Visit kfuo.org and check out the worship archive.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Pro-abortion activists demand reproductive choice for women. But when state and federal legislatures consider giving pregnant women more choices, the so-called pro-choice movement opposes every attempt. Bills allowing women to see their babies through ultrasound, opposed. Laws giving women informed consent before having an abortion, opposed. Proposal to protect pregnant women by requiring safety and health standards in abortion mills, opposed. Giving women 24 hours to consider the ramifications of abortion, opposed. A bill to give parents the choice to be involved in their minor daughter's surgical abortion, opposed. The evidence is overwhelming. Pro-abortion activists are for anything but reproductive choice. That makes them anti-choice.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
Both in Leviticus and Luke chapter 10, as the readings for this coming Sunday, God makes clear that we are to love the neighbor as ourselves, even if our enemy is the neighbor. How does this agree with the Colossians message that we are not saved by works, but by God qualifying us to be partakers of the inheritance as saints? It's the next Law and Gospel.
Weekdays at 6 on KFUO Radio.
Now showing at the Omnimax Theater at the St. Louis Science Center, the movie Hubble. Hubble vividly recounts the amazing journey of the most important scientific instrument since Galileo's original telescope, and the greatest success in space since the moon landing, the Hubble Space Telescope. Tickets are available at Ticketmaster.com/SLSC. Change your view of the universe with the IMAX movie Hubble at the St. Louis Science Center.
Redefining marriage, I'm Steve Coleman with today's Religion Roundup. This week's General Assembly of the Presbyterian Church USA will consider redefining marriage to include same-sex couples and allowing ministers to perform same-sex weddings where they're legal. The Reverend Carmen Fowler, president of the Presbyterian Lay Committee, believes those sorts of initiatives are to blame for the denomination's declining membership.
We would want to uphold the historic biblical definition of marriage between one man and one woman, and we would like to see that upheld across the PCUSA.
The mainline Presbyterians are meeting this week in Minneapolis. Some commercial and government properties may be ripe for conversion. A Baptist church in Arkansas has offered the city of Jonesboro $400,000 to buy a building that now houses city offices, and a Kentucky megachurch has a contract to buy a defunct mall in Lexington and reopen it as a religious facility. I'm Steve Coleman.
All right, it's Ask the Pastor on the Bible Study on KFUO Radio. Phones open at 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Dawn has a question about going to church. Dawn, welcome to Ask the Pastor.
Hi, and good morning. I remember Pastor Fremmel as our SEM student at Blessed Savior. But anyway, I was calling to as a comment to... we have a 21-year-old and a 25-year-old and an 11-year-old. We have switched churches, and because the church we were going to was my mom and dad's church, and my mom passed away. But anyway, and I always said I wanted to have our own church. I know it sounds funny. We're still LCMS. We go to Hope in St. Anne, but we're really excited about it. And I think the best thing you can do for your children is truly have that love of the Lord and excitement. I cannot wait to go to church every Sunday. It's almost like Christmas for me every Sunday going to Hope and Bible study. And I think if your kids sincerely see it and it's not fake, it catches on. He went, and he hadn't gone to church in quite a while, my 21-year-old. Now, my 25-year-old lives in Alabama. He's getting his PhD, and he goes to church. I can call him and ask him where the... You know, I drill it in my kids. The most important thing you can do is go to church, and what you do here is temporary, but heaven is eternal. That's your inheritance. That's the best inheritance we can get. So I said, whatever you do, as long as you live, love the Lord, stay close to the Lord, and go to church. Well, Eddie didn't do that. Eddie fell away, and I asked him to come to church, and he could see the pastor's enthusiasm as well as ours, and now he says even his girlfriend, who is Catholic and hasn't gone to church since fourth grade, my son has joined, and she wants to go through adult confirmation. So I think if you're really excited, and it's true, and you have that fervent love for the Lord, your kids will go.
So you're really engaged in your church, and apparently that's rubbing off on the kid.
Yeah, because they see it, and they're just like, wow, you. And even my son that came home at Easter time for, you know, to visit us from Alabama says, Mom, I can see why you love this church. I can see, and everybody in it, even the people there are different. I mean, and I'm not saying, it's just, I know there's different churches for different people, but I'm just saying it's just like, we cannot wait to go every Sunday, and we're involved, and it's like, even though it's farther for us to drive, you know, I bet it's worth it. And my son has saw it, and he's like, yes, and he's a member now, and he goes every Sunday.
What a success story. But how did you find that church?
On KFUO.
Oh.
What happened was, is I had some health problems, and I listen to KFUO every day. I love it. I love you, Paul Clayton. I love everybody there in Christ. I'll put it that away. So, and I listen to it every day, all day long, till you go off air. And one Sunday morning, I wasn't feeling well, and I listened to the service, and I heard Pastor Ostermeyer on the radio. And I thought, I told my husband, we just went to visit. That's it. And I said, we have just got to go. I've got to hear this man in person. We got there. We went Palm Sunday. We were in church, and we got out of there, and I got into the car. I said, we're home. And that's history. We've been there ever since, but I still listen, and I listen again to the church services. So I still listen, even though I go. I listen to everybody's church services when we're, you know, in the evening when you replay them, and the Bible studies. So I thank God for all of you and all the pastors you have. But I had to call and tell you that if you're truly excited, you know, it rubs off, and your kids will see it. And if you just go to say you got to go like it's a duty, you know what I'm saying? It's not going to rub off on the kids. You can't fool the children, especially young adults.
What about that, Pastor?
Well, your kids definitely are examining and studying everything you're doing. Hey, Dawn, by the way.
Hi.
I thought I recognized your name when you called in. I was like, hey, wait, is that Dawn?
Yeah.
Yeah. But your kids know when you're lying. They know when you're telling the truth because they see us so much. And if you actually take the faith seriously, your kids will see this is something worth taking seriously. Your kids might not aspire ordinarily to the level that you do, but rarely do they ever exceed their parents. So if their parents are just going to church as a duty, your kids aren't even going to do that probably. But if you take the faith seriously, if you get active in your church, your kids will say, wow, this is actually something worth living for. Actually something worth sacrificing for. Actually something worth passing on and buying into.
Well, that's what happened with us, but I just had to call and tell you that. So
that's awesome to hear that that the example of awesome parents have won
their
children.
Oh, well, no. The Lord has blessed us, and it's all glory goes to God.
Well, that's what it is. God worked on you, and he made you awesome parents. That's awesome.
Well, you are too, you and your wife. But anyway, okay, well, thank you so much.
Thanks for the call, Dawn.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. She sounds like a real spark plug in the congregation, too.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Yeah. So, what about the child that doesn't want to be catechized, doesn't want to go through the process? Should you make them anyway?
You know, for me, I'm going to make home visits to everybody that I do the confirmation with and talk to the kiddo and let them know why it's important and everything because, you know, at that level, kids aren't thinking, oh, you know, I don't want to go through confirmation. I don't want to do the Lord's Supper. If you're kind of raised in a congregation or you join a congregation when your kids are little, they just kind of learn, this is just what happens. You know, you go. And when it's incumbent upon the pastor to do what we're calling parents to do when we do confirmation, not just sit there and say, All right, open to page 16 in your catechism. This is, it's time to talk about this. And then send them on their merry little way after you've bored them to death for an hour and a half. But let them see the faith as living, active. Let them see the champions of the faith as they follow Christ. And let them see how this stuff really actually impacts and intersects with their life. You got to do it.
You mentioned that you largely were raised in a public school setting and didn't really connect with religion until you came to the seminary. You said, what changed things for you?
My parents were always very strong Christians. Very strong Christians. We were every
Sunday. So you had that support in the house.
Yeah. We were every Sunday church attenders. We always went to Sunday school, except for a couple of years when my brother got in some odd Sunday school conversations with the teacher teaching him how to hotwire a car. It's not quite a Bible study, or, you know. So we kind of took a break from then, but we went right back into Bible study every Sunday, and it was a great deal. So I had a living and active faith as I was growing up. I just always went in public schools, and I went to the local public university to do my teaching degree, and it was a great university. We just happened to live in the area, but once I went to seminary, it was my first Christian, explicitly Christian school, and it was interesting because even in my undergrad, I liked to pick fights with professors who even made little snippy comments about the faith or about religion, and I'd never lose ground. I'd never want to let it go. I'd never just say, "Oh, that's their opinion." I'd always try to win them over. But God just halfway through college, God made me very uncomfortable being a teacher. Nothing wrong with being a teacher. He just said, "Mark, you're going to do something else," and I had no idea what that was. And I can even trace it back. It was the day after Christmas, 1999, and 7 days later, I told my parents, you know, I have no idea what this means, but God wants to make this eternal difference to me. He wants me to be a pastor, but I have no idea what that means, if I'll ever come back, if where I have to go, or if I'm going to end up in a mission field in Africa somewhere, but that's what I've got to do. And I asked my wife, who was my fiancée at the time, and I said, "Baby, I'd really love for you to come with me, but I know that this is a big deal. This is a big change. I'd love you to be with me, though. So I'm not going to pressure you. It's up to you." And so she said, "You're sure about this?" And I said, "Yeah." So she says, "All right, let's go." So now I've got a wonderful wife and two gorgeous little girls, and we are.
It sounds like a supportive family that didn't try to dissuade you from making this change.
Yeah, it was a big change. I'm the first pastor in the family, but my parents are strong Christians. They still are today. They every Sunday attenders. It's an awesome deal.
How much of it was choice, or was there any choice involved when you're called?
Well, there's a lot of choice. You could do a Jonah and run away, but it doesn't do any good because God will chase you down.
You feel blessed because of that?
I look back on that Christmas 1999 as a gift.
Yeah.
I love this. I get to talk about Jesus all day.
Yeah.
We're all supposed to do that anyway, but I get to do it full time. It's an awesome deal.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Can you spot in any of the youth at your church a likely candidate for seminary?
There's one kiddo that is kind of the running joke that he's going to become a pastor. And if he does, it'll be a blessing to the church. If God uses him in another vocation, it'll be a blessing to the church. He is he just has all the answers. He's smart. He's very good at talking. He's very good at persuasion. He's a great guy to be a friend with. So if God uses him as a pastor, I won't be surprised. If God uses him in somewhere else, it would be it'd be a blessing to whoever he serves.
How does a pastor construct his workday? For instance, you. How do you approach the workday? Do you first have a devotional?
My devotions right now is I try to, I've got something in the Bible that I'm, sections in different in the Bible that I'm reading, Acts and Proverbs right now. So I'll read those a little bit. It really is based on the day. I try to get a lot of the study and the personal time and with God done in the morning, so that way if you postpone it, it just doesn't happen. And then, I start working on the different activities that I have for the day once I've got my feet in the right place.
Mm-hmm. And what does that involve? Visiting people in the hospitals?
Visiting in the hospitals, strategizing different things that we've got coming up, helping out with different ministries, working on publicity, all sorts of stuff.
Administrative duties?
Administrative, but, it's a good deal to just hang out with the people of God,
Is it
can't plan all the time.
Is it kind of like being self-employed, being a pastor?
Yeah, it is. God's looking over your back, and he's looking over your shoulder, so he knows what's going on. But, yeah, you've got a good deal of freedom.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Here's a question for you, Pastor. Good morning. Welcome to Ask the Pastor.
Thank you. Good morning. My granddaughter asked me the other day, we lost a pet, and she said, Grandma, do pets go to heaven? And, of course, I was stunned by her question, so all I could say was they're a creature of God, and of course they go to heaven. But I wasn't sure if I gave the right answer. So, do pets go to heaven?
My little girl, my four-year-old, she lost a cricket, and she asked me the same question. And this is a question that everybody has to wrestle with the kiddos when they run into death. And it's cool that kids, even at a young age, know that God is the solution for death. You know, a pet dies, a person dies, he wants them in heaven, you know, he's the solution. Here's the official answer, and then I'll give you what I tell my kids. The official answer is the Bible doesn't actually detail what happens to animals when they die, because God's first priority is what happens to people. I will say, we do get a lot of symbolism. We get a lot of talk about, you know, heaven and the new world. And there are animals there, or animals that are talked about. So I would say this. We don't hear that animals go to heaven. We don't hear what happens to animals after they die. But it would be a bit of a waste for God to start all over with new animals, you know, with the animals he'll have in paradise. But, and I don't know if there's going to be that much room for the animals when God's going to be packing it full of people. So who knows? But this is what I tell my kiddos whenever something dies. We've lost some crickets, and we've got a rabbit that I think might be kind of going that way. But I will always say this. Jesus is taking care of it. Jesus is taking care of their little cricket or rabbit or dog or hamster. Jesus is taking care of it. And usually for them, that's enough. They're probably filling in the blank that they're animals in heaven. But all they need to know is Jesus is taking care of them.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for the call.
You're welcome.
Well, I'm curious, too. What are we supposed to do in heaven? Enjoy paradise or worship? I thought we were just supposed to worship Jesus and God all the time.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I came out and talked to my mom and dad when I was supposed to be taking a nap. And I came out when I was like 7 or 8 years old. And I was just bawling. And they said, what is wrong? And I said, if I die, which I'm going to die anyway, if I die, I'm going to get stuck in heaven playing a harp, or I could go to hell and burn up forever. I don't even like harps. And I said, I could do it for a little while, but after a while, I'm going to get tired.
It would be like hell.
Yeah, there's Jesus. Play your harp. But, but I realized that when you read the Bible, we get this like continuous worship service in which we are just enjoying being in the presence of God. Enjoying being apart from all the junk we have to deal with us in this world. There are some people who say that we'll do the exact same thing we do in this world, in that world. But here's the problem. What are the policemen going to do? No one's going to be breaking any laws or, you know, not stopping at crossing guard passes. You're not going to get, you don't need firemen in heaven. You won't need teachers in heaven because, you know, people have forever to learn it. And if they don't learn something, it's not like, you know, they're going to.
Well, we're certainly not going to need pastors in heaven.
And I'm going to be
you're out of a job.
Because everyone's going to believe in Jesus. And they're all going to say, I could talk to you, Pastor, or I can go talk to Jesus.
Yeah.
I'll be in the unemployment line, and I'll be very happy.
Be glad not to be in the other place. That's the main thing.
Yes.
Let's take a call from James. You're on Ask the Pastor, James. Go ahead.
Good morning, Brother Paul.
Hi.
Good morning, Pastor.
Good morning, James.
I'd like to know if James chapter 1, verses 27, I know on Wrestling with the Basics we've been doing the commandments. I'd like to know if verse 27, which commandment would that fall under or be akin to? And, Paul, I don't know if it's contractually or what, but are you able to do Wrestling with the Basics twerp on the Bible study?
Yeah.
I'd like to hear one of those today if it's just possible.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, thank you. Pastor's on vacation, Pastor Lukomsky.
What about that question?
So James chapter 1, verse 27, is religion that is pure and undefiled before God. The Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their affliction, and to keep oneself unstained from the world. So to keep oneself unstained from the world, you know, we get stained by following all these, by breaking all the commandments, but, you know, that's going to be the first commandment chiefly, because being right with God keeps you unstained from the world. And when the dirt and germs of the world come along, he just washes them off. But I think you're leaning towards this, visit the orphans and widows in their affliction. I would tie that into the traditional standard, the traditional counting being the fifth commandment, being that thou shalt not kill. Because if you refuse to help somebody who's in significant need, you're literally saying, you know, I'd rather you starve to death than me being inconvenienced and sharing a loaf of bread or something. And ignoring the widows and orphans and their affliction is doing just that. You're turning your back on people who actually need significant help. So I'd say that, thou shalt not kill, but also thou shalt preserve life. As both sides of that commandment.
Hmm. Where do you draw the line, though? I mean, should I sell everything I have and give all my money away?
Well, Jesus told this rich guy, sell everything that you have, give your possessions to the poor and follow me.
Or do I just do 10% or a certain percent, you know?
Yeah. You know, we were talking about this in a Bible study. We were doing the Sermon on the Mount, and it says, love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you. We were talking about Luke and Sermon on the Plain, same kind of stuff, and give to the one who asks from you, and, you know, give to someone without seeking to be given back to. And I said, you know, we get this section in the Thessalonians where Paul says, if someone will not work, neither shall they eat. And so we get this thing where we're supposed to look what's in their best good. We're supposed to be constantly interested in what's in the other person's best interest. And we can ignore it, and you know, that's to their own detriment, but also to our own detriment. Or we can actually give them sacrificially. And for the Christian, the question isn't, how much is this going to cost me? For the Christian, the question is, will this actually help this person? So as a pastor, I get a lot of people coming to the church asking for free things or free money or free help or free cash or free food or anything. For me, the thing I've got to make sure is that it will actually help them. If it's just throwing more pennies into a lake and it's not going to make any difference, that's not going to be actually helping them. That's going to be enabling them. So, but I will say, out of all the admonitions that Paul says, be discerning with your giving, there are, you know, easily 25 or 30 times where we're commanded to give. A lot of times we say, oh, we're not supposed to enable people. But, you know, most of the time when we get this command, that's not even an issue. It's give sacrificially.
And back to the kids we were talking about a while ago, they really like to do that, don't they, the youth?
It's amazing because they're not going to be much for giving up money or giving up a bunch of stuff, but if you can show them how a little bit of time goes so far, it changes everything. So you put in a day. We're doing Habitat for Humanity on Friday. You put in a day building someone's house. Did you lose a day? Yeah, but you just put up a house around somebody who had no other option other than getting along by living on the street or something like that. And it's an amazing thing to show them how little it takes to do big things. And once you do that, once you've kind of caught that bug, they just won't stop.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's take a call here. Let's see if we got it zeroed in here. Yep. Not connected yet. We'll work on that one. So this Habitat for Humanity project, where's that going to be?
It's going to be in downtown St. Louis. I don't remember where the exact location is. They're going to be driving this, but Thrivent is sponsoring this.
Ah.
And Thrivent's an awesome organization, helps churches out in so many ways, but they're sponsoring the build. And so I'm going to show up with a bunch of people from our church and pound some nails into something.
Sally, your question for Pastor.
Yes. My parents, my mother especially, has dementia. And I remember when I was a little girl that I was afraid that my mom and dad were going to die. And I couldn't deal with death. And it's still very hard for me to deal with death. And now with my mother going through this and taking care of her, besides praying, is there anything else that I can do for my mom, I mean, she's my best friend, but is there anything that I can do for her and for me?
Remind me, it's your mom or your dad who has dementia?
My mother.
Okay. My my grandfather had Alzheimer's. It runs in our family, and so when I was...
Go ahead.
You didn't like my answer.
Go ahead.
Okay. When my grandpa was... he was in a nursing home for a number of years, and he had Alzheimer's. And, you know, me being the seminary student, I wanted to give, like, in-depth Bible studies, teach him all the faith, and I realized he just needs to hear simple Jesus. And so he and I would just talk. He started out as Christian Science, but God gave him some clarity through the Alzheimer's that he indicated a pretty strong Christian faith by the time he died. And it was a neat thing to see how God could work even in spite of dementia or Alzheimer's or any of the stuff. And it's incredible how the ugliest things, dementia, cancer, all this stuff, it God even uses these things too.
My grandmother had Alzheimer's and a very devout Christian. Always went to church. And then I wondered, as she began forgetting and didn't do that anymore, what happens? This is a hereafter question. What happens when you lose your mind?
Yeah, so if you ask somebody, do you believe in Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior? And they just look at you blankly.
Yeah.
You know. It's like faith was a child. You know, they trusted in Jesus. They continue to trust in Jesus. And even if someone loses their mind or loses the inability to talk, it doesn't mean God's taking his hands off them. When God says, I'll be with you always to the very end of the age, he's not going to abandon them because they can't remember their name. He remembers it for them.
Mm. Do you make visits to nursing homes?
I do.
Mm-hmm. What is that experience like?
I'm doing a chapel now at a nursing home in the area, and I did that on Vicarage. And on Vicarage, I thought, oh, you know, this is a huge responsibility. But on Vicarage, I realized, and I'm celebrating it now, that you actually get to be right there with people who are going to see Jesus probably pretty quick, and you get to be the one who gets to carry them that message, perhaps for the last time. And it is an awesome thing to see people with childlike faith belt out half the words of Amazing Grace because they can't remember the rest and they can't read so well. But it is an amazing deal to see somebody. And I only hope that when I become in that age range too, that God will so bless me with the privilege to have that childlike faith.
You know, those chapel services are such a great benefit for the people visiting Grandma or Grandpa on Sunday, too, because many times there's nothing to talk about. They don't even respond to you. But if you can go to that chapel service, that's good for everybody.
Oh, yeah, it is. It's good for the people who can participate. It's good for the people who have just gotten wheeled down there. I mean, it's good all around. It's great for everybody.
You got to wonder if there isn't purpose in that invalid in bringing perhaps one of those relatives into the chapel that otherwise wouldn't be there.
Yeah, if they didn't have a purpose, God would have called them home.
Yeah. Pastor Mark Femmel, thank you for being with us today from Zion Lutheran Church in Maryland Heights. Blessings to you.
Thank you very much.
Listen to Chuck Rathard and guest pastors Monday through Friday at this same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download programs from the Bible Study archives at kfuo.org. The Bible Study is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis.